Practice Listening Test 3. In Section 1, you will hear two people talking about the towns where they grew up. First, you will have some time to look at questions 1 to 9. You will see that there is an example which has been done for you. On this occasion only, the conversation relating to this will be played first.
Time goes so quickly. I can't believe that I will have been here for 5 years on Saturday.
That's a long time. Where did you live before that?
I lived in a small town about 150 miles from Perth on the southwest coast of Australia called Albany.
When you say small, how small do you mean?
Around 12,000 people.
What's it like growing up somewhere that small?
Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen because you will not hear the recording a second time. First, you have another chance to look at questions 1 to 3. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 to 3.
Time goes so quickly. I can't believe that I will have been here for 5 years on Saturday.
That's a long time. Where did you live before that?
I lived in a small town about 150 miles from Perth on the southwest coast of Australia called Albany.
When you say small, how small do you mean?
Around 12,000 people.
What's it like growing up somewhere that small?
Well, it has its advantages. People tend to be much more friendly in small towns. You seem to get to know more people. The pace of life is much slower. Everyone seems to have more time to talk. And generally, the lifestyle is much more relaxed. On the other hand, small town life can be pretty boring. Obviously, you haven't got the same range of entertainments available as in the city, and unless you want to go into farming, you have to move elsewhere to look for a job.
So, farming is the main industry then?
Well, actually, no. There's a lot of sheep and cattle farming, and more recently, a lot of people have started to grow potatoes. However, the town was first established as a whaling base, and although there isn't any whaling today, most people are still employed by the fishing industry.
What's the weather like?
In summer, you get some fairly nice days, but it gets really windy. In winter, I guess the average temperature is about 15 degrees Celsius, and it's still really windy, and it's very, very wet.
Sounds lovely. I can see why you're here.
Oh, come on. It's not all that bad. It's got a beautiful coastline and beautiful beaches. You can drive for about 45 minutes and you'll come to absolutely deserted white beaches. You can be the only person swimming there.
With that wind, I'm not surprised.
Don't be like that. We do get some good days. Anyway, where do you come from?
Maureen goes on to ask Gordon about his hometown. Look at questions 4 to 9. Write the answers to questions 4 to 9.
I come from a town called Watford, about 17 miles from the centre of London.
Is it a big town?
Not really. It has a population of around 80 to 90,000, but the whole area is built up, so it's hard to say where Watford finishes and the other towns begin.
So did you enjoy living there?
Well, being so close to London has advantages. You get the latest films and music. There's always something going on, and there's such a wide variety of different people and cultures that it's difficult to get bored. Of course, All this has its downside. The cost of living is so expensive, and most people can't really afford to go out very often. So, although the entertainment is available, you've really got to have a lot of money to enjoy it. Another problem is, like most big cities, there's a lot of crime. And there are areas of London that are, yeah, very dangerous.
Gee, well, what about the main industries in Watford?
Well, a lot of people commute into London, but there is also a lot of local industry. Before desktop publishing, Watford used to be the centre of a printing industry in Britain. Also, there used to be a big factory manufacturing helicopter engines, but that closed down about 2 years ago. Nowadays, I suppose the biggest industries are electronics and light engineering.
I suppose that it gets a lot of snow being in England.
Not really. Usually snows once a year, and that rarely lasts for more than 2 or 3 days. The weather's mainly cold and wet. Sometimes you get a light rain and it lasts for weeks.
It's a bit like Albany then. Is there anything you particularly miss about living there?
Well, near to my parents' house is a large park. Must be about 10 square miles in size, and it has a canal and a river running through the middle of it. Some good walks, you can go fishing, and sports facilities. Sometimes I miss that.
Would you like to go back?
I don't know. I'm quite happy here at the moment. I like the weather. It's great to get up in the morning and know that it's going to be sunny.
Yeah.
What about you?
Probably, but not for a long time yet. At the moment, I enjoy the excitement of the city. My work and most of my friends are here, and it is nice to know that there are so many facilities available. However, I think that Albany might be a good place to retire to. It's safe and easy to make friends there.
Yeah, I'm going to be here for a while too. I've just signed a new contract for my job, which means I'll be living here for at least another 5 years.
That is the end of section one. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Turn to section 2 of your question booklet. Section 2. You will hear a presenter giving information about the site of an art and music festival. Look at questions 10 to 14 and the map. As you listen, write the appropriate letter from the map next to the facilities stated in questions 10 to 12 and write down the answers for questions 13 and 14.
Good afternoon. I'd just like to make a few announcements before the first performances begin at this year's Heslington Art and Music Festival. Firstly, a short guide to some of the more important places on the site. There are three stages. Stage one is the main stage and is where I'm speaking from now. Stages two and three are opposite each other to the left and right of the main stage. The first aid post is located directly behind me and to the northeast of the main stage. The organiser's office is next to the rear entrance, and this is where lost children can be reunited with their parents. In front of this office, you will find 10 public telephones. These telephones can only be used to telephone out. They will not receive incoming calls. Toilets are to be found in all four corners of the stadium site. If you lose anything, you should make a report at the security post next to stage two. Remember to visit the souvenir stores in the car park in front of the main entrance to the stadium. If you want to leave the stadium for any reason, please remember to keep your ticket with you, as you will not be readmitted without it. While on this subject, to make exit and re-entry simpler, could everyone leaving the site use the main entrance at the other side of the car park leading onto Gladstone Road? This is to allow performers easy access to the site through the rear gate behind the main stage. Most importantly, when leaving the area of the stadium, try to keep as quiet as possible so as not to disturb our neighbours. We have already been warned that we'll not be given permission to hold the festival next year if there are complaints from local residents.
Now the presenter goes on to explain the evening's schedule. Look at the entertainment program and questions 15 to 19. Answer questions 15 to 19 to complete the table.
Now that I've got the official announcements out of the way, I'd like to tell you about tonight's program. The Brazilian drum band will be appearing on stage 3 at 7. This is the first time that they have performed outside South America, and so their show is not to be missed. This will be followed by Claude and Jacques, the French mime artists, at around 8 o'clock. During the performance, Claude and Jacques will be introducing special guests from the fields of music and dance. Meanwhile, on stage 2, there is a modern ballet from Great Grapefruit Incorporated, illustrating women's role in world peace. This will begin at 7 and last for roughly 2 hours. Stage 1 begins at 9 with the jazz fusion band Crossed Wires, whose performance tonight is the last date on their world tour. Stage 1 continues with a regular guest at these festivals, comedian Tom Cobble. His show begins at 10:30. After Claude and Jacques at 9 on stage 3, there will be a performance by the Flying Burrito Brothers, who are acrobats with the Albanian State Circus. The Flying Burrito Brothers' fire-eating trapeze act is unique. No other performer has managed to equal their grand finale. From 11:15, we are happy to present Winston Smiles and the Kingston Beat, who will be playing authentic Jamaican reggae until the end of the official program at 1:30. Over on stage 2, the great Mistron will be presenting his show of magic illusion and mystery at 9:30. During the show, he will be chained and thrown into a sealed aquarium from which he will try to escape. If everything goes to plan, the act will finish at 11:30 and the stage will be ready for the country and western music of Bluegrass Ben and the Cattlemen at 12. This act will be the last on stage 2 tonight. After Tom Cobble on stage 1, we have tonight's main attraction, the Prophets, who will be performing in public tonight for the first time since they broke up 5 years ago. The news is that they are back and they will be presenting a show including both old favourites and songs from their new album, which is to be released in September. They are expected on stage at midnight. After the official programme has ended, there will be a number of side shows taking place around the site.
That is the end of section 2. You will now have half a minute to check your answers. Yeah. turn to section 3 of your question booklet. Section 3. You will hear two students discussing a survey they have to write as an assignment. Look at questions 20 to 25. Listen and complete questions 20 to 25.
How is your market research project going, Frank?
Very well, actually, Teresa. I've just got the results of the survey back, so now I've got to draw some conclusions from the information I've collected.
That's good. I'm still writing my questionnaire. In fact, I'm starting to panic, as the project deadline is in 2 weeks, and I don't seem to be making any progress at all.
What's your topic?
Forms of transportation in the city. What about you?
I've been finding out about people's attitudes to the amount of violence on television.
That's interesting. What do your results show?
Well, as I said, I haven't finished writing my conclusions yet, but it seems most people think there's a problem. Unfortunately, there's no real agreement on the action that needs to be taken. Nearly everyone surveyed said that there was too much violence on TV. A lot of people complained that American police serials and Chinese kung fu films were particularly violent. The main objection seems to be that although a lot of people get shot, stabbed, decapitated and so on, the films never show the consequences of this violence. Although people die and get horribly injured, nobody seems to suffer or live with the injuries. Any children watching might take the heroes of these programs as role models and copy their behaviour.
So what did most people suggest should be done?
A lot of people are concerned about how these films affect children. They're particularly worried that children will try to behave like the stars. The survey shows that violent programs should only be broadcast after 10 p.m., when most children are already in bed. There's also a significant minority of people who feel that violent films should be banned altogether.
How did people feel about the violence on news broadcasts?
Most of the responses I've looked at have felt that violence on news broadcasts is more acceptable as it's real. Although it's unpleasant, it's important to keep in touch with reality. Still, many people thought that it would be better to restrict violent scenes to late evening.
Frank and Teresa discuss the methods they are using to conduct their surveys. Look at questions 26 to 29. Listen and complete questions 26 to 29.
Your survey sounds very good. How many people filled it in?
I gave out 120 copies and I got 70 back.
That's a very high rate of return. Who did you give your questionnaires to?
I gave a copy to every student in my hall of residence and to a few friends from other colleges.
Don't you think that this will influence your results?
How do you mean?
The people in your hall of residence will all be about the same age. They're all students, most of them studying similar subjects and from similar backgrounds. Therefore, it's likely that they will have similar opinions. Your results represent student opinion, not public opinion.
So how are you going to do your research?
I'm going to interview my respondents in the shopping mall. What I'll do is ask people if they have 5 minutes to spare to answer a few questions. If they agree, I'll ask them some multiple choice questions and tick off their answers on my sheet. That way I can select people of all ages and attitudes. So my sample should be reasonably representative.
Isn't it very difficult to ask meaningful questions using a multiple choice?
Yes, it is. I suppose your survey has the advantage of more detailed information. However, in most cases, people won't bother to give answers that require too much effort on their part. The secret to writing a successful survey is to write simple multiple choice questions that target the information you're looking for. Therefore, it's better to write a lot of short, specific questions than longer general ones.
So that's why it's taking you so long to write.
Yeah. But I hope I'll be ready to start interviewing at the weekend.
That is the end of section 3. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section 4 of your question booklet. Section 4. You will hear a lecturer giving a lecture on quality control. Read a summary of the lecture made by a student and look at questions 30 to 35. Listen to the lecture and answer questions 30 to 35.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Today's topic and our series of lectures on the stages of the production process is quality control. Some people believe that an effective quality control system amounts to an inspection of the finished product. This morning, I intend to prove to you why those people are mistaken. The main drawback with a finished product inspection is that it is an after-the-act operation. No amount of inspection can make bad work good. For this reason, most large-scale manufacturers consider quality control to be an ongoing process. The advantages of this are considerable. It cuts wastage, it saves time, as no hours are lost on work done on already defective items, and perhaps most importantly, it is easier to detect a fault when the product is still at the component stage. So when should quality control begin? Well, usually with the raw materials. If the materials are of substandard quality, there is no point in processing them. More to the point, substandard materials can be returned to the company at no cost to the manufacturer. Although these benefits seem obvious, you might be surprised to know that only 87% of large firms and 62% of small firms have a standard raw material inspection procedure. For the same reasons, it is a good idea to test components brought in from another company. In many manufacturing processes, it is useful to carry out some form of quality control on products while they are still being manufactured. It is often easier to check individual components before assembly takes place. Equally, it may be valuable to test components by their function. I suppose the bottom line is that every product and every company has its own requirements, and the quality control program should be arranged accordingly. The next question that needs to be asked is, what are we testing for? Again, this depends on the product. An expensive car has different requirements from a cheap plastic toy. However, in both cases, the most vital testing is for safety. An increasingly common reason for testing these days is environmental impact. As the public becomes more and more concerned about green issues, it is becoming more and more important to measure a product's effect on the environment. This testing must assess the impact of both the product itself and the manufacturing process.
Questions 36 to 40. Before the final part of the lecture, Look at questions 36 to 40. Answer questions 36 to 40 according to the information given in the lecture.
This brings me to my next point, standards. Of course, standards imposed vary greatly from country to country and industry to industry. However, 87% of all companies in Australia do have written quality controls set out. 80% of these are developed within the firm. These standards are nearly always based on guidelines set out by one of the major control boards. 65% of these companies have adopted standards in line with SAA, Standards Association of Australia, while a further 22% use standards set up by individual trade or industry associations. Only 23% of firms have a set of standards which adhere to international requirements. This 23% represents some of Australia's major exporters. So, who is responsible for quality control? Well, again, there is no one answer. Companies place different levels of importance on quality control. A recent survey tried to find out who usually takes charge of the quality control function. It was discovered that 18% of top management were directly responsible, while 56% of middle management and 26% of quality control personnel oversaw this function within their company. It seems that most manufacturing industries see quality control as a middle management task. The final thing I want to do this morning is to consider the effect of releasing undetected low-quality items. The manufacturer stands to lose a great deal. Through direct loss of custom, through possible further loss of custom and goodwill when word gets around that the quality standard is unreliable, through the cost of dealing with and compensating the customer who has complained, through the need to maintain higher replacement stocks and a large repair force. In conclusion, quality control is a vital part of the manufacturing process, helping to ensure that Australian products remain competitive in the marketplace.
That is the end of the listening test. You will now have half a minute to check your answers.